This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good morning and welcome to Guardian Radio AM. Today is Friday, June 6th, and it's a little after 11 o'clock in the morning. Once again, this is C.A. Nuri, and I shall be your host for today as we talk revolution, right? I have a treat for you today. I have a treat for you because I have an intellectual here in studio. Someone who I knew was so smart back in the day that I said, how did you become a revolutionary? That don't make no sense. You are a trailblazer. You came from a life of privilege. Like, I know you from high school. You educated. You don't just know a little bit educated. You gone to real school, real university. You met intellectuals and changed people's mind in terms of how they approach. You are an academic, right? And my friend who is here, Trod Rastafari. And I said, that can't be. But during that time in the 90s, right? I'm not sure if any of you know that I happened to went to a private school, small private school in Fox Hill Dale, right? And I had a group of men who were activists. And my guest too is one of those who spoke out, who demanded change, who analyzed things, right? And these were powerful men because they were recognized early as being the new leaders of the Bahamas. So I expected them to become doctors and lawyers and stuff like that, you know, journalists and stuff like that, right? And at this school, upon graduation, upon going to COB, upon going to university, a group of my associates, friends, right, became revolutionaries. To change what they wanted wasn't working fast enough. They became what I call black conscious. They become Pan-Africanists. They join an African movement to propelling and pushing Africans forward, right? And I'm not sure if you know that once upon a time, we had about 6 to about 10 lawyers who were all what I call Rastafarians. And at top law firms in the Bahamas, these weren't no ordinary people. These were brilliant. Some of the top lawyers we had in the Bahamas were dreadlocks all the way to their back. I happen to have one of them here today, right? And I say, I want to know how that happened. Because like I said, when I went to school, I was clean cut, right? I studied diction. I try to use the proper grammar and syntax and stuff like that. I studied history, you know, I studied law. I studied political science, and these contemporary of mine did the same thing. But without further ado, I'm going to fast forward everything and introduce you to Alex Morley. Mind you, most of the Bahamas know who he is because he's a, for lack of a better word, a big-time lawyer inside the Bahamas, even despite his youthful age. But Alex Morley, welcome.
Welcome. Thank you, Uhuru. Uhuru, Mr. Nuri. Thank you for inviting me on your show. Good morning to your guests, and you know, I bring greetings from Angliston. I bring greetings from my family, the Morley family, and you know, my entire family, and just Uhuru. And thank you for bringing me, inviting me on the show. You had said one thing about the. I just want to say this isn't taking anything away from anybody, but the law firm in the Bahamas that was open to. Rastafarian brothers and sisters was Lockhart and Monroe. So yeah,
Big shout out to Lockhart and Monroe, because how many Rastafarian lawyers you had there at one time?
I think at least, but three of us had passed through there from Shaka to Raj, then me, and then I think some ladies too, you know, at least one lady, you know. But yeah, as far as I know, you know, that was the firm. They weren't turning away brothers and sisters who had dreadlocks. You know, that wasn't something that they were. That wasn't a concern of Mr. Monroe, for sure. You know?
And Lockhart and Monroe, and that's Wayne Monroe. And what Mr. Lockhart's name again?
QC.
And Elliot
Lockhart. Elliot Lockhart.
QC. Casey. This was one of the most prestigious law firms, right? Mm-hmm. And as you know, that Wayne Monroe became a parliamentarian now, and he is a minister. And then Shaka Seville, who's a Rastafarian at that time, is now not a judge. What do you call that?
Magistrate,
right? And then, of course, you were one of the leading attorneys. But I want to give kudos to those men, those trailblazers, who would say, who hired people on merit, right? Because I don't know if it was me, if I would hire a Rasta lawyer to be around my clients. But y'all were brilliant.
Right.
I mean, not just average. I mean, y'all were brilliant.
Let me put Mr. Ferguson in that too, Obie Ferguson, you know. That wasn't a concern of Mr. Ferguson. But Mr. Elliott, Mr. Lockhart, Mr. Ferguson, those were not Mr. concerns of those, things that they were worried about, you know. I think that they were willing to just give you a chance, yeah.
Good. But now I want to hear this narrative because I have so many things. This might even be a two-part show.
Right.
Because I want to understand you and your narrative.
Right.
Like, you went to high school with me.
Right.
Yes, right? You were a clean-cut gentleman.
Pretty boy.
Pretty boy, in fact. I mean, he's still a handsome dude, right? But you know what I'm saying? If anyone's watching, they could see that Mr. Morley is a good-looking fellow, right? But he would have called with a clean-cut, handsome boy. And something happened either in university, right? That made you say, man, I am more black conscious. And then you change to be the person who you are, a lion.
Right. I think, you know, what I went through isn't different from a lot of persons who, you know, going outside can give you sometimes a perspective, you know? And it took certain things to open up to me when going on the outside. But I would say too, you know, I had my brother who was here, who was a Rastafarian from the 90s, who was a part of the EABIC. You know, I had that before me. I hadn't accepted the African consciousness yet. No, I didn't. I didn't accept that yet. But when I went off, I knew that I was. I wanted to be a part of something bigger than myself. And yeah. And the minute I, just through my education, being afforded the opportunity for my father and my family, being able to, they were working hard, being able to afford the opportunity through my educational travels, I was able to encounter, you know, different literature, different people, you know, you know, going into bookstores and meeting different running into different people, different organizations. The African diaspora in London, I was able to do my legal studies in London, and the African diaspora is in London, you know, in terms of persons from the continent and persons from the Caribbean. So it's a very Pan-African, I guess you would say, a Pan-African center. So, you know, just moving through in that atmosphere, yeah, it changes your mind. It changes you. You see a different politics.
And my text line is asking if you can give a narrative of your education. You mentioned England. Mm-hmm. They still asking what high school we went to, and said it's not doesn't matter. But just to establish who you are,
right.
Give us like a brief rundown on. Because I know you first as a journalist.
Right.
One of the better journalists, leading journalists here in the Bahamas, writing inside a newspaper. I know that.
Right.
And then all of a sudden you disappeared and I found out that you were doing law or whatever it is.
Right.
But I just say that, like a resume type thing, so people could appreciate you.
Right, right. Let me see. You know, E.P. Roberts, St. Augustine's College. Then after I graduated from St. Augustine's College in 97, I went to Synog in Raleigh, North Carolina, you know.
What did you study there?
In Raleigh, I was doing poli sci.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Political science, go ahead.
Yeah, Raleigh, I was doing political science. And then for Raleigh, my old man was like, boy, you got it. What you could be? You could be a teacher, or you could be a lawyer. You got to be something. You can't be, you know, what that could do, you know? So, yeah. So from Raleigh, I didn't finish Raleigh, but I left Raleigh and I went to England. And I started the LLB program in England. And that's where I did at the University of Wolverhampton at the Holborn College. That's where I did my LLB. And then in terms of the BVC, the Bar Vocational Course, I did that at Northumbria University in Newcastle. So, yeah. And then I came home after that.
Yeah. So where did the journalism thing kick in?
The journalism thing came in, writing. I never thought I could have been a writer, you know.
Prolific writer. I mean, you write some documents and challenge some things.
So up to this day, I still don't consider myself a writer, you know. And I say, Ms. Williams, that's a name.
Ms. Williams. And Ms. Moffitt.
Cook. Yeah.
And Ms. Cook. Williams and Ms. Cook. Hope Cook.
I don't think I ever got a C C was what I used to get, maybe a B minus. So I never considered myself a writer, but I think finding the movement, the African liberation movement and socialism, it made me want to say something. You know, it made me wanting to express myself and be a part of it, you know. So, yeah, that's how I kind of got into writing, yeah. And so when I came home, I ended up working at the Tribune, working with Mr. Ferguson as a legal clerk at Obie Ferguson & Cole Law Firm. I ended up working at the Tribune as a journalist. And then I was called to the bar over here. And then I went to Lockhart & Monroe, started my legal career from there. So the journalism came like in between the coming home and before I started being a lawyer.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I know you mentioned poli-sci, political science, and I know you mentioned the movement, right? And I want to explore that to get some more information. Once upon a time, you formed your own political party.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if once upon a time is the appropriate word. It might be still around.
No.
But I want to hear more about the audacity.
Right.
The audacity of hope that you decide to form a political party in the Bahamas.
Well, you know, let me first say, you know, I'm a part of a movement. I am a part of an organization. I have been associated with the Uhuru movement. The party is called the African People's Socialist Party. I've been a... For the last several years, I've been associated with that. So me going into politics in the Bahamas was not something that I was only inspired by myself, you know. I always wanted to, you know, come home and make a difference in my community. But the first time that I ran for Angliston, I was an independent. I ran as an independent candidate, and the second time I ran as the African People's Socialist Party. But both of those times were both sparked by the movement, because I'm a part of the Uhuru movement, the African People's Socialist Party. And the leader of the African People's Socialist Party is Chairman Omali Yeshitela. You know, I feel a lot of what I'm saying right now, you know, and the reason, Billy, that you have me here, have invited me here has a lot to do with the chairman's philosophical guidance, you know, and organizational guidance. You know, he has been a very instrumental role in the movement, you know. In the 50s and the 60s, you know, the African liberation movement was at its peak, you know, in terms of, imperialism was in a crisis as it is right now. But it was just as a peak, you know. Revolution was the main trend all over the world, in Africa and South America. But that movement, of course, when there's a movement, there's a counter movement, a counter revolution, and a lot of the organizations and leaders from that era were either incarcerated or imprisoned, or just went through a lot. But the chairman has been keeping that fire burning from the 60s until now, you know. And his theory, African internationalism, has guided me a lot, you know.
And I want you mentioned the word Uhuru, mm-hmm. and this African internationalism.
Right.
For the listening audience, can you like give a definition of what is it? Right. What is that?
Well, I say African internationalism is is a philosophical outlook that that demands that the African working class see the world from their own eyes, you know? And I think it allows you to see it in a different way, upside down. You know, when I say upside down, meaning in the sense that it puts us first.
Puts Africa first.
Africa first.
And usually they have Africa's last. They're right. European-centric countries, and then Africa is one of those third world need help.
Definitely, you know. I think Eric Williams would have written a book, Capitalism and Slavery, and Eric Williams was a part of the movement too, you know. He's a part leader, Trinidad. In his book, he would have described, you know, the relationship of where capitalism came from, this world system that we are dealing with right now, you know. Whether we are Muslim, Christian, or Buddhist, right now the system that we are dealing with is capitalism. And Eric Williams was not only him, but he was one of the persons who would have shown that there's a relationship, there's a deep interconnected relationship between slavery and capitalism, you know? Capitalism just didn't come out of thin air. But the Chairman O'Malley Shatila, and the work that the Uhuru movement and the party that they have done, their sweat and blood, the chairman has not only shown that capitalism and slavery and colonization are interconnected, but the chairman has showed he has turned Karl Marx on its head in terms of showing where capitalism actually comes out of, arises out of slavery and slavery and colonization gave birth to capitalism, you know? And so it deepens our understanding, you know? When Karl Marx would have written about defined capitalism, he would have said that the basis of capitalism is primitive accumulation, you know? But when he wrote it, he just wrote it as a footnote. Through sweat, blood, and tears, and struggling, Chairman O'Malley Shatila has been able to give African people a philosophy that helps them to understand that this world, capitalism, was brought about on our backs, as the sweat and blood of African people, you know? And if we want to know how to change the world, we got to know how the world was changed. And the chairman helps us to better, African internationalism helps us to better understand how the world was changed.
Okay. So, I mean, in depth. No, man, I appreciate it. It shows that you are well-versed in it. It's not a fad for you. It's just something that you're conscious and believe in.
I don't want to mumble, and I just want you to lead, you know. Yeah.
I understand. But I see I have a caller here, and a caller who wants to engage you and ask you one or two questions. Yes. So I'll allow that caller to patch through, and I'll continue the interview. Go ahead, caller.
Yes, sir. Good evening, sir.
Good evening. How you doing?
You know, your guest is a breath of fresh air. You know, like, he seemed to be the only socialist voice in the Bahamas. You know, we have a media host. She claimed to be a socialist, but she does the capitalist work. She promote capitalist organizations and the like. You know, and you know, we need a person like you, sir. We need a socialist party in this country, a socialist movement in this country. You know, we need, and you know, we need the what you call it, the ununionized workers to become a part of that organization, because they are the strength. You see, you're not gonna appease the private interest, people with private interest. You see, and you need to continue to come in this mainstream media. You see, because the masses is where the masses get the information from. You know, no mind what's going on in the social media. You know, the mainstream media are who the politicians are concerned about most. you see? And I commend you, son. Please, please stay out front of your man. You know, get some what you call it, sponsors, get some capital just for you to do that thing, just for you to stay in the media, you see? Get some buy some time on these shows, you see? And get involved with those folks. You know, the guys that come on Saturday morning in Garden Radio, you know, they would really accommodate you, and you would do well with them. Thank you.
I appreciate that. I know that voice from a long time ago, so, you know, I definitely appreciate everything that you would have said. And, yeah, you know, I seen it just like how you seen it. You know, the ununionized workers, you know, yeah, the people who sometimes we don't consider. Yeah, that's the workers that need to be organized as well. So I definitely agree with that, you know, and appreciate everything that you would have said.
I have another two-part question. One, it's a Trapsy question. Are you Bohemian or are you African? It's the question. And the second question is, why socialism? Your political party, your consciousness is based on socialism. So are you African? Right? And why socialism is the question?
Well, I would say am I African? I'm an African. I think, you know, one of the, even winning that amongst our people has been a struggle, you know. And we all of us are still a part of that process in winning that amongst our people. That African people come from Africa, man. You know what I'm saying? That's where they come from. They ain't come from, like, some other place, you know what I mean? Black people in the world come from Africa, and the persons of African descent in the Bahamas, that's where they come from. They come from Africa. And I'm saying that doesn't mean that I'm not proud of everything that is being done in this land in the Bahamas. But accepting our African nationality, you know, I think that that's a big part of the future movement that we're trying to build. And socialism, you know, again, if we want to know how if we want to change the world, you know, and I've been, as a young man, that's what I've been into. How are we gonna change the world? How are we gonna make things better? So me, if you understand capitalism, I was just telling somebody the other day, you know, when African people speak about capitalism and we speak about development. And if you're speaking about capitalism, it's almost an oxymoron, because if you know the history of capitalism, you know that it's being built on the back of the African people and the oppression and exploitation of African people. That's how the social system came about, you see? Mm. I know that it seems the social system that we are under right now seems sacred, right? When I say sacred, it seems like it's immovable. Like, this how things always was, you know, operating where there was workers and companies and banks and all of that. But there was, and that's one of the reasons why history is becoming so important. But before this social system, there were other social systems. There was feudalism, you know what I'm saying? There was a primitive period, you know? So how this social system came into about, it just didn't come about through the natural development of man. It came about through two entities coming into contact with each other, created a whole new social system, and those two entities were Europeans and Africans coming together, and that created capitalism, a new social system, moved them from feudalism to capitalism. So me wanting to build a new social system is because I know what this social system is about, and I know what this social system, where it has come from, the exploitation of African people and other brown people around the world. So if I want to build a new social system, I know it got to be based on the people. It got to be based on the people, not about money. Right now, capitalism about profit. We want to build a new social system based on human beings, man, bringing peace and happiness to human beings. That's what socialism about. A whole overturning this social system and building a new social system. But in order to do that, you got to know how, have some idea of how this social system came into place, if you want to change it. Yeah.
And you speak about the people mm-hmm. often. And I know you have done a number of education, edifying movement in your community of Angliston, right? And just for the listening audience, what all have you done historically in the past in terms of enlightening people, in terms of educating Bohemians, in terms of bringing the community together? I want to hear some kind of narrative about that.
Okay. I think African Liberation Day, I think, you know, there are other forces around who have been a part of that process. African Liberation Day is a day that the African conscious community celebrates, you know, worldwide.
Which day is that?
It's on May 25th. It's on May 25th.
So May 25th is African Liberation Day?
African Liberation Day. And it's a day that signifies, it's a day where we, the movement that I was speaking about in the 50s and the 60s, which was about African unity and socialism and black power, that movement was actually brought to a halt, you know? So African Liberation Day is a day that we illuminate the struggles of African people, but we also remind ourselves that the struggle continues, you know? And I've been a part of being a part with other forces in making sure that institutionalizing African Liberation Day in the Bahamas, saying, listen, man, the revolution ain't over. You know, bringing that on the table every year. The revolution ain't over. We got to complete the revolution. And Africa is a big part of our completing this revolution, you know. So institutionalizing African Liberation Day. I think, you know, being a part of the community, at one point we were doing community marketplaces, you know, community marketplaces.
What do you mean by community marketplaces?
I think, you know, self-determination is African unity and self-determination. That's two of the basic principles that we've been pushing. And when I say self-determination, meaning that we got to do the things that we need to do for ourselves in terms of if we want to create the commercial spaces where we can sell and trade goods between each other, then we have to do that, you know? and I know that marketplaces isn't necessarily a unique idea, but inspiring that and pushing that self-determining kind of impulse within people in our population, I think that we've been a part of that in the Angliston community. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, just keeping the community vibrant. You know. And I also think, you know, I have me and my wife, with the help of my family, of course, we have a bookstore in Angliston, East Street and Robinson Road. And I think that's like the best thing that I could describe that as like a gas station, you know what I mean? Like a black African gas station where you need some gas, you know what I'm saying? Because this thing ain't easy, you know, in terms of struggling, putting across, you know, African consciousness and a new social system, a new philosophy. So you need some gas, man. And our bookstore, I think, is a place that allows persons to come in and fill up, get a little bit of gas, buy one book, you know, buy some stuff that come from Africa and local products.
So and thanks very much for bringing that up. You mentioned you and your wife.
Yes, sir.
Owns a bookstore in Angliston. I think that's on Robinson Road someplace, right? Where the bookstore is like a cache, a library of African books or African-centric books. Why open a bookstore?
The first time I read Cheikh Anta Diop, and the first time I read The Wretched of the Earth by Fanon, you know, I felt cheated. You know, I felt like, yeah, man, there's a lot of information out there that I wasn't exposed to.
Mm-hmm.
And I said that, you know, I need to make sure that to bring this information home to my people, you know what I'm saying? So all of us can be a part of this experience, you know what I'm saying? You know, and this was before pre-internet and all. This wasn't before pre-internet. But the internet wasn't as it is right now, you know? But, Yeah, to me, all of the jewels, the wisdom that I was finding was in these books and the different organizations and the people that I was meeting. So I was like, hold on, I got to bring this home to my people, man. I don't want my community to be cheated. You know what I'm saying? I want them to be a part, to know that they are a part of a greater movement. They are a part of the Caribbean, of course, but we are a part of a great movement of African people liberating themselves. Yeah.
So the bookstore is called Black Food.
Black Food.
Right?
Right.
How did y'all come up with that name? Right. Why Black Food?
Right.
Right? And mind you, it's a premier bookstore. I mean, I know of people who have traveled to the Bahamas, right? Who've traveled to the Bahamas and heard of your bookstore and say, hey, I need to find it, and driving all the way in the city and say, hey, I'm from the United States. I heard that you have a bookstore. I'm here to hear the history. Right. And it has been like a mecca where people come for conversation.
Right.
I mean, I'm seeing you have hosting conversations,
yep,
and lectures at Black Food. Why is it called, again, Black Food?
I think and persons do come in the store almost every other day, if not every day, and say, man, y'all don't sell no food? And I just have to tell them, no, not yet. We ain't started selling no food. It's more of a play on words, you know. Black and food, again, you just need, it's not easy, you know. It's not easy, the things that we have to do as human beings, you know what I'm saying? And we sell African books on African history. We sell books, leftist books, books on socialism. But we also sell books on lifestyle and books on literature and culture too, you know, because that's another thing too, because it's, it's about opening up the culture to our people, you know what I mean? Uplifting our people, you know? And a lot of those self-help books and books on economy and business, books that give you business tips and cooking tips and health tips. Those are good books. Those are good books that the people need, you know, because they help them throughout their day, help them to solve things. So just be in a space that people could get a tool that they may need to sharpen up on something. And also provide them a space where, you know, it's African conscious.
And I see you have a number of Caribbean authors too, even Bahamian authors.
Where
Bahamians can seek, those books that you can't find, especially those books on topics where you said, I just didn't know this about Africa, or I did not know this about the African movement in the United States.
Right.
It's like lost books that you have there,
right,
you know, that people cherish. I've seen people come inside your store and just sit and just thumb through.
Right.
And then you have the conversations, of course.
I just wanted to... We started with the classics, you know, the books that I knew that, like, yeah, we got to read. And then my wife just drew work and time going through, you know, different publishers, you know, to get the list together, but there are also different African books that conscious books. If you read them, they have a book list in them to say, man, this is what you need to read. You know what I'm saying? Walter Rodney has a book like that, where he has a book list, and different African conscious writers. Hakim Obuti has a book where he shows a list of books that you should read. So, you know, it was a yeah, just a journey to be able to come up with the books, you know. I wanted to, whatever I read, if I read Fanon, I read Cheikh Anta Diop, and not that everything I read is the thing, you know what I'm saying, but I just knew that I wanted to expose it to, make sure my people were able to see it.
Yeah. Today you're bright. I mean, you have this multicolored rainbow shirt. It looks African.
Right,
bud. Right? And I see we're going to take a break right now for a minute, but I want to know where you get this bright colored African dashiki that you're wearing, and what's that all about, right? But right now, this is Guiding Reading AM. My name is C.A. Nuri, and I'm having a conversation with attorney Alex Morley, entrepreneur Alex Morley, revolutionary Alex Morley, Pan-Africanist Alex Morley, socialist Alex Morley, intellectual Alex Morley. See all these, you know, these words, right? And you know those persons who you go to have conversations with? That type of Alex Morley I'm having a conversation with today. This has been Guardian Radio in the AM, and we'll be right back.
J.S. Johnson Insurance agents are the best. Reliable service, they've been on the scene, protecting since 1919. J.S. Johnson Insurance has the best. Always, you're always covering me. J.S. Insurance.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The new Guardian Radio app is here. Listen live to all our Guardian Radio shows and live video stream select programs in our studio. Get information about Guardian Radio shows and our hosts. Send messages, including text, email, and even call. All from our amazing new Guardian Radio app. Download it free today in your App Store for your Apple device or Play Store for your Android device. The all-new and improved Guardian Radio app.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
And welcome back to Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Nuri, and I'm having a conversation with activist Alex Morley, right? And before the break, I was asking him about his clothing, his garb, this daishiki. I mean, this is nice. It's just, this is like high-end. This is like a regal type of daishiki. It's not like the normal washout ones. Right. Like, what's that about?
I think, you know, it's from the store. You know, the motto of the store is all things African. And it took a while for us to get a relationship with particular traders on the continent. But it's from Ghana.
These shirts come from Africa?
From Ghana, you know. Like I say, it took a while to get established relationships. You know?
So these real African shirts?
Yeah, man, real African shirts. You know, I was just having a discussion about that with someone the other day in terms of what is real African or not, you know. And, you know, wherever African people is, I think, you know, that is Africa, and we're trying to bring that together. But Africa is the richest continent in the world. And there's a serious, African people poor, and, you know, and Africa's rich, and we got to resolve that contradiction, you know. And us reaching out to the continent for goods, it's a part of the socialist movement, to tell you the truth, you know what I mean? We're trying to bring a new social order, producer to producer, you know, get rid of the middleman, you know what I'm saying, in terms of other persons bring in goods, either taking African goods for themselves or not giving African people the value of their goods, but forming that relationship between Africans, African to African, you know, getting rid of the middleman. So, you know, that's the store has been a part of that process, and these clothes and the jewelry, some of the jewelry that we have is from Mali. And it's local artisans as well, you know. So, yeah, it's just creating that producer-to-producer kind of economic relationship.
I see another caller here and who wants to engage you, so let's get that caller through before I go to the next question. Go ahead, caller.
Good morning, Mr. Nuri.
How you doing, man? Blessings to you.
And good morning to you, Alpha Sandra Guest. The brother makes me proud. But I just want to make a quick input because you were saying the struggle continues. So I'd like to bring to light a conscious Nessie about something that I learned years ago. It's called terra nullius, right? I don't know if you guys are familiar with it, right? But it's a doctrine and it's a law passed in 1835 by some British lord. I think his last name was Burke. Can't even pronounce it properly because it's, you know. But it was a proclamation in which land, it means land belonging to no one. And so this was the ideology of the colonialists, They use it in Australia and they use it throughout Africa. They didn't consider Aboriginal people to be anybody. So I was trying to figure out, and I was trying to keep my wits, right? This law was passed in 1835, but I haven't heard one third world pathetic leader raise the question and try to strike down the legality of this law, much less the Treaty of Tordesillas. So the struggle, even the civil rights struggle, we have achieved some goals, right? But we must remember that racial agendas are hidden, and so we must not give up. So let's live up. I just call it that, bring light to that. So and for me, right, I should tell the leaders to come together and strike down this proclamation. Because what President Mugabe did was he just did what the Europeans did. But you see what they did to him. Now, what happens is when they had the documentary on Mugabe, they asked if you liked the video or disliked the video. But I didn't answer. You know why? Why would they want to know that? You still have to understand the panopticon that they're creating here, you know. Why you need to know if I liked the video? Let's wake up as a people, man, all right? And just go and Google Terra Nullius and find out why the third world leaders haven't strike down the illegality of this capitalistic, ghoulish agenda. Bless up.
Thank you very much, 52.
Appreciate that.
Your movement is an international movement.
Yes, sir.
You're chairman who in charge of the movement itself.
Mm-hmm.
Some people say, man, he's going to get locked up.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Say that he has done some revolutionary work which the establishment say, man, this place is a terror. Mm-hmm. He shouldn't be free.
Mm-hmm.
And you have associated yourself with that, right? I want you to comment on that.
Well, let me say right now, the chairman is actually going through the party, and the movement is actually going through a campaign right now, the Hands Off Uhuru, Hands Off Africa campaign. Because the U.S. government has made attacks upon the Uhuru movement in the U.S., where our party, the leader, and other party leaders were arrested and detained, and items were taken from them, you know, and they are considering bringing them formally before the courts, you know, for allegations in regards to conspiracy. But I would say... Listen, since I've been a part of the Uhuru movement, everything that we have done, everything that the chairman has done, I mean, the party was established in 1972. Everything the chairman has done has been in the open, you know. There isn't fighting for socialism and black power. We don't fight for that in the shadow, you know what I mean? We don't fight for that hiding. We fight for that amongst our people and in the open, you know. The chairman has spoken internationally all over the world, you know. He's spoken at Oxford, different places, you know. So, I don't know exactly where which angle. I know which angle that they're coming from, you know. The chairman and the party is going through the same thing that Marcus Garvey would have gone through in the 1920s. Marcus Garvey had the, up to this day, he still has the largest organization of African people. And Marcus Garvey was brought before the courts in the U.S. for mail fraud and all kind of other trumped-up charges, you know. And it was just because Marcus Garvey had struck out and said, Africa for the Africans at home and abroad, you know what I'm saying? And I think, and Marcus Garvey, too, had done it in the open. Nothing, no hiding, you know what I'm saying? Trying to organize something in the shade, you know what I mean? We organizing, because we fighting for freedom, justice, peace, and happiness. So we fighting this in the open. So, the chairman has been a vital part of this movement. And right now, the party is under attack, and the same attack that the UNIA was under. And we'll be asking people to stay in tune to that campaign. There's going to be a mass meeting on January 17th. I will be taking part in that meeting. I'll be speaking, and I think there's a meeting coming up on January on the 9th, this weekend.
And when you say meeting, where exactly?
Online.
Okay.
People can check out Omali Yeshitela on Facebook, Omali Yeshitela, or the African People's Socialist Party, theburningspear.com, uhurunews.com. All of these would be different portals where the information about the mass meeting, because it will be online, will be taking place. So one is definitely on January 17th, which I would be a part of, and I believe that there's one on 9th, this weekend.
So where can people find you? you'd have these conscious conversations,
right.
One, because I know you host intellectual talks, right. Where you talk with Africa and have lectures in general, mm-hmm. And you host events. And I know a few people know that you host for the African Liberal Day,
right.
Events. Where Africans are in the Bahamas come together and sell wares and have talks with them. Where can people find you?
Well, they can find me at E Street and Robinson Road at Blackfoot Bookshop. That's an exquisite square. It's directly across the road from Super Value. We're there. I'm a lawyer, so if I have court, sometimes I go to court in the mornings. But normally we open from 10 to 5. We open from 10 to 5, right there on East Street and Robinson Road. So people can find me right there. My number is 525-0147. Beyond that, you know, I'm Chupadolio Street. You know what I'm saying? People could always find me through there as well. But before the Christmas, we had started to commence some meetings to prepare for African Liberation Day, which is coming up on May 25th. And we had some meetings at our bookstore, and we hope to start up some more meetings this year, because we're trying to do is get a good start on that day, you know.
And I'm going to stop you right there, because I want participate in African Liberation Day.
Right.
And when you say it's going to be an event, what is it that you're planning exactly? So right. I can understand, how do I participate? Or if other persons want to be a part of this, what is it that you're trying to get at?
Right, you know, and I'm only a part of this. I'm only a part of the process, you know. I may not be the one to lead the work at the end of the day. But I am a part of the process. The idea is to have to bring together all of the African conscious organizations so that we can have a united African Liberation Day, where we can have it like a cultural fair.
Cultural fair.
Cultural fair. But also a serious element to it, where we'll be making solidarity statements in regards to Africa, what's going on with our people throughout the world. So it's a cultural fair. Plus, a political element in it as well.
So all those black conscious persons or who want to know about Africa can come to this particular fair and see the wares, see the lectures, experience the lectures, listen, buy books, etc., etc.
For sure, definitely. And not only books, but all the different organizations, they'll have their goods and their food and stuff like that. So, yeah. And I'm sure other persons will have books too.
And which day is it going to be again?
Well, African Liberation Day is on, I think it's during the week. So this one will be on May 28th.
May 28th.
Which will be that Sunday.
I'll keep my listening audience abreast. This has been Guardian Radio and AM. This is C.A. Nuri, and I had an interesting conversation with one Alex Morley, the attorney, the activist, the revolutionary, who was just given a short snippet of his life story and, of course, his movement. Again, I see you Monday, and of course Tuesday is a holiday, so you won't be here, but Monday I shall be here again, and we'll be having the president of the Bar Association with us, so I'm excited about that. Have a wonderful day.